My first instinct is I am not a business owner. I'm not an entrepreneur. I didn't come from money. And in my mind, those are the only two people that own businesses. You either came from money and were exposed to it, or you had just had an entrepreneurial mindset. And that wasn't me. I was in the Marine Corps for 24 years. But I listened to what he had to say. He put me in contact with this franchise consultant, and the next thing you know, I started going down this pipeline with my wife, figuring out, like, hey, we might could do this, And next thing you know, I bought a franchise. I bought a Mosquito Hunters franchise in two territories down here. And let me tell you what, I never knew I was meant to be a business owner until I became a business owner.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Kaprelian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Kaprelian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. On this episode, we have Josh Ambrose, Marine, logistics officer, franchise owner, and assistant vice president at Bank of America. He'll go through his lessons learned throughout his career, but also how he leveraged those lessons learned in his career for his transition and what he's currently doing. I love the energy from this episode. You're going to love it too. He brings a lot of enthusiasm. So sit tight, listen up. Take some notes, because I promise you I'm doing the same thing. And here we go. Josh Ambrose, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey there.
Very glad to have you on. You're an extremely busy man. You have an extensive career. You also have a very exciting post-transition career, not only as a business owner, but also in the financial sector, that you have lessons learned that you can share with our audience. But before we get into that, Josh, please tell our listeners where you grew up, how you got into the Marine Corps, and kind of lead us through just kind of a quick summary of your military experience up to the point just before you transitioned.
Yeah, sure thing. And thanks for having me. I like doing things like this. When I was transitioning, I tried to soak up as much knowledge from other people. So some of the things I'll pass on are stuff that I learned from other people and some that I learned along the way. But I grew up in Beaufort, South Carolina. You may have heard of it. I grew up right next to Parris Island, about a mile away. My grandfather was a retired Marine. So my dad settled down there, and my mother was raised by her grandfather, who was a Navy Master Chief at the station at the hospital there. So I kind of was around the military a lot, and I knew I wanted to join the Marine Corps, but I wanted to be an officer, and I knew that I didn't really come from a lot of money, and I really didn't have anyone to talk to about college because my parents didn't go to college. So I kind of got hooked on that fancy MESAP program that recruiters use to get you to come in, and that's how I came in the Marine Corps. So I enlisted in 1997. Thinking I wanted to do the MESAP program. Not really sure how, but I actually followed through with that. Most people get hooked on that program, but don't necessarily apply when it comes time to it. But I did. I applied. I was probably, at that point, enlisted. When I was accepted for the MESAP program, I think I had like five and a half years in. Got selected for the MESAP program. The Marine Corps sent me to University of South Carolina, which is where, well, they sent me to school full-time. I chose South Carolina. Graduated, got commissioned, went to TBS flight school, got winged as an aviator, jet pilot in 2007, went to the RAG, did not make it out of the RAG, flying F-18s, transitioned to be a logistics officer in 2008, 2009 timeframe. And then I spent probably my last 15 years as a logistics officer, kind of all over the place. I, spent time with the grunts, spent time with the air wing, spent time out in recruiting district. That's actually how I know Chris. And then my last command was here in Blount Island in Jacksonville, Florida. where I retired in 2021. So that's a real quick snapshot of my background.
That's like a quick snapshot of traveling the world three times around its circumference, but and I don't, there's so much gold. I know that there's going to be in this conversation, but so I'm not going to ask to ponder, but was there one experience or one or two experiences throughout your military career that you look back on with fondness and maybe made a mark on you?
Yeah. One of the things I talk a little bit about quite often is, when I was going through flight school, pretty much every single thing you do in flight school, you don't think you're ready to do. You know, when I landed on an aircraft carrier, the first time you land on an aircraft carrier, you do it solo. You're in a jet by yourself. And there's absolutely no way that I thought that I was ready to do that, but I did it, you know. When I jumped out of airplanes in Fort Benning, Georgia as a young sergeant, I did not think I was ready to do it. But the reality is there's guys to my left and the right that were doing it, and then and I call it peer pressure, call it whatever, but if they're doing it, then I'm doing it. So that same mentality has kind of transitioned over to a lot of the things that I do now. I kind of have more of awareness of it, that I can do more than I think I'm ready or capable of doing. And I feel like that's carried over a lot. So that's one of the things I like to talk about and fondness. The other things usually have to do with, you know, I didn't come from a lot of money, but I had a very good upbringing by my parents. And I think that laid the foundation for my hard work ethic that I got from my dad specifically. You know, I remember he was working three jobs at one point when we were growing up. And that also carried over. But what I'll say is the Marine Corps did a very good job at, refining that, you know, redefining and honing that down of working harder than, you know, probably our peers are in certain sections of the civilian sector at that age. You know, I also like the exposure to the amount of responsibility that I had in the military. I think that helped out tremendously. So, you know, a conglomerate of a lot of different things, but I look back on my time in the military and I don't regret it. You know, once you get past those first few years, time just starts flying by. And next thing you know, it's 24 years later, almost. I was like 1 month short of 24 years. And I'm hanging up the hats and doing something else.
I can somewhat relate to that. I know that I keep running and for some reason my knees start squeaking. It's like the time flew by. I feel like the Tin Man in the Wizard of Oz. Somebody give me a can of oil. No, but that's great. And that's a great reflection of the benefits of military service and kind of learning how to take a deep dive into the unknown, which I'm paraphrasing right. Some of the things that you're saying, but, I think that's one of my takeaways. So you've had this career, a very dynamic career in the Marine Corps. What brought you to the point of thinking about transitioning out of the Marine Corps?
I had a good buddy. He was a major at the time. He was about two and a half years senior to me. I was a major at the time as well. And he made the decision to retire out of Long Island. And I remember saying or asking him, like, hey, man, how do you know when it's your time to retire? And he looked at me straight in the face and said, when it's your time to retire, you'll know. And it's like, well, that makes no sense to me. And then it came time. And next thing you know, like, I absolutely know it was time for me to retire. And it wasn't like a conglomerate of things that happened or one single event. It was just kind of where I was in life and what I kind of wanted to do, you know, family situation and stuff like that. I mean, Chris, you and I spoke. I went through a divorce and I chose, you know, the real reason I ended up leaving is because I went through a divorce that I started. I won custody of my daughter. She was 3.5 years old at the time. And I didn't want to keep going in the court battles and being, you know, handicapped and tied to the needs of the Marine Corps. So I chose my daughter over the Marine Corps. So, you know, things will happen and you'll know when it's your time. What I will tell you, what I did not expect is when it's your time and you know it, transitioning becomes like something you constantly think about. Or if you're not, then you need to maybe reconsider like what you're doing, because transition is not an easy step. There's far more tools and resources out there for us than there were to, you know, for those getting out 10, 15 years ago. And to a point, maybe too many resources. It can kind of be like the Cheesecake Factory menu, of, you know, so many choices of of people trying to offer, you know, nonprofits offering their services to you and you don't really know what to choose. But I knew, and I started thinking about it constantly, you know, where I would wake up in the morning and I used to check Facebook. Instead, I was waking up in the morning and checking LinkedIn, you know, so I just kind of knew.
That's crazy because I can relate. God, that's scary. I can relate on so many levels, even the personal levels about choosing to put my daughter first.
Right.
And I mean, and quite frankly, to me, there's no more righteous mission than that.
It's a weird feeling though. You know, if you've always been a top performer, you know, it's weird to purposefully make choices to no longer be in the runnings for selection. You know, when I was out in recruiting, when you were out there and I was at the district and yeah. I got a call from a captain on the promotion board. And he goes, "Hey, the RSCO board wants you to see if you can get your photo updated and get your last fitness report in." That's a tall tale sign for they're considering me. Well, no offense, but that was the last thing I wanted to do at the time, going through a divorce. I knew the writing on the wall, but it was weird to make choices like not getting from my promotion photo done because I still wanted to get a few more years in, but I couldn't tie myself down for my situation for 5 to 6 more years to pin on Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah. I 100% relate. It's a weird feeling putting in a remove by request for command selection.
Right.
And it was funny. I was staring at a group of captains and I was thinking about what I was going to tell them. And that thought crossed my mind, but they're going to come to their own crossroads. And that may be as a general officer, or it may be in a similar position as us. In some ways, there's some trepidation, but in other ways, after making the decision,
right,
it's like taking a bunch of bricks off the shoulders because I've made it, you know, I'm making a mental transition.
Absolutely. I mean, your name is not going to be on a list.
Yes. But you don't have to worry about the list coming out.
Yeah, it's either by your choice or their choice. Your name is no longer. That could be when you're a gunning sergeant. That could be when you're, you know, lieutenant colonel. It could be when you're a general officer. But when you make that decision, it's a much easier pill to swallow than that decision being made for you.
Absolutely. So you made the decision. You know you're going to be getting out. You know you're going to retire. All right, what's your game plan? Because you're a man. You're not the type of man to not have a game plan or have some type of path you're going to execute. So tell me a little bit about that.
You know, you start talking to other people that have already doing it, and you pick up on things that you might could try out, like nonprofits you can look at to help you. You start picking people's brain. And one thing that everyone kept saying over and over and over, and I know you've heard it too, is that, you know, you want to start your transition at least 2 years out. And you're probably like, what the heck does that mean? 2 years out? What can I start doing 2 years from now? Well, there's a lot you can start doing. And it's the same thing that you're going to have to keep doing even once you get a job. You know, depending on the type of level of a job that you transition into, but it's just networking. You know, you're going to have to start networking, you know, establishing your some sort of a presence on LinkedIn. Resumes are not dead and gone, but they're nowhere near as important as LinkedIn is nowadays in your profile.
And it's good to reemphasize the power of LinkedIn as well.
Yeah. You know, the thing about LinkedIn is that you can't think of it as like Facebook. You know, with Facebook, you really only want to connect with people. Most people want to connect with people that they know. On LinkedIn, you just want to build out your network. You want to give as many connections as you can. And the thing about LinkedIn is it's such a game changer because you can no longer have the excuse, well, I was retiring out of Okinawa or getting out of Okinawa. Because with LinkedIn, you can do these things called informational interviews online. You can have a phone call. You can do a Skype, Zoom. So, you know, I started doing these informational interviews. I started attending some webinars and, you know, learning about the different options out there, you know, what Amazon had. A lot of people I knew were going to Amazon. But I was trying to figure out, what did I want to do versus what was available, you know, and those two stars had to align because you have a little more leverage when you're retiring to kind of do a little more what you want to do and less what you need to do. So, you know, nothing against Amazon. I've got some friends doing that. But the theme that I kept hearing was it's you get paid a lot of money, but you get worked hard. And I was like, yep, no thanks. Moving on. No offense. It just wasn't for me. You know, I just went, you know, custody of a daughter. I wasn't trying to work 75 hours a week. So I started doing all those things. But what I wanted to talk to you about was one of the things that I did when I was in New York. There was a nonprofit station or based out of New York called American Corporate Partners. Have you heard of them?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Amazing. You know, and trust me, they do not pay me to say this at all, but I am a huge fan of them because it's a 1 year long free mentorship with somebody at the level, like a level above what you want to go into in the civilian world, or maybe in a certain industry or at a certain location. They pair you up, and it's like once a month you can meet. If you're in person, you can meet in person. If not, you know, they paired me up with an executive at Disney, of all places. And I'm like, what the heck does Disney have to do with logistics? And turns out everything. The guy I was paired up with was in charge of all uniforms, costumes, whatever, all of that throughout the entire world. And it was a very eye-opening mentorship because it was, you could just ask questions like dress attire, you know, for calling people on a first name basis. Just all sorts of like how to be comfortable with negotiating salary and almost that it's an expectation. I'm a huge fan of American Corporate Partners. I highly recommend everyone check that out. I'm also a huge fan if you're trying to get some sort of certification underneath your belt. I'm a huge fan of Syracuse's Institute for Veterans and Military Families. They provide like a free course. I went through the study course for my project management professional certification, PMP, and got that. But I started doing all those things. I started building out my LinkedIn profile. You know, we're in the Marine Corps, we are really good at copying what else somebody else does. So I was looking at a lot of people's profiles that I thought were really good, and I was building mine out to, you know, look like that. Because one thing that's important with LinkedIn is that when somebody sees your profile, that's probably the first and last time they're going to look at it, unless there was some sort of update or change to your status. So for me, it was important to get my LinkedIn profile up and running and looking good before, you know, I started networking with people trying to learn more, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. And it's like a constant reminder about how mine... needs a makeover. Well, I'm going to steal yours, by the way.
Yeah, take a look at mine. You know,
yeah, no,
it's free.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think it's what you mentioned, the Syracuse program. Is that the same thing as the Onward Opportunity program, or is that different?
Yeah, no, same thing. Honestly, sometimes I'm not. I think IVMF is the institution, and Onward Opportunity is that specific program that they offer.
Okay. I'll look it up. I'll put it in the episode notes if anybody else wants to take a look at that. I've heard about it. I mean, quite frankly, I thought about getting my PMP funded in the same way that you did. I've heard good things about PMP. It's not the type of thing that's going to land you the job, but it definitely helps in salary negotiation because of the credibility behind it. I don't know if you've experienced the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, spot on. You know, it's like, you could have a degree in underwater basket weaving. It may not help you make money, but the fact that you got that piece of paper is what's, you know, really going to help you. It's the same thing with the PMP. Now, I will tell you, I would be cautious because there are a lot of people getting out of the senior enlisted and senior officers getting out and getting that certification, which, by the way, was the absolute hardest test I've ever taken in my entire life.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
So,
yeah.
FYI on that one. But I got it, and there are a lot that get it, and then they think because they got it that they're going to be able to do stuff in the civilian world, and it's different. You know, it's not necessary. Yes, we led efforts and projects, but it can be different depending on where you land. But so is a lot of other things that you land into in the civilian world. But your ability to just go with the flow and figure it out and have an action for bias is what will make you successful. Or excuse me, a bias for action.
Yeah, no, tracking 100%. Okay. So I get the steps that you took, but you're the owner of Mosquito Hunters Jacksonville South and St. Augustine, according to your LinkedIn profile. I'm looking at it right now. Brother, what's the genesis of that? I want to hear the genesis story.
Yeah, so throughout the process of transitioning, I sat in on one of Amazon's webinars about the different programs and pipelines they have, and I learned about their DSP program. I think it stands for Delivery Service Partner. You know, all those people that deliver the actual boxes to your front door, they don't work for Amazon. And most people don't know that. They work for a small business owner who owns those vehicles and is just supported in training and networks and systems by Amazon. Same with UPS. FedEx has it as well. And when I was in the process of like, oh, this sounds very interesting. I can be a small business owner. I can do logistics. You know, the thing about it is it's very lucrative, but it's also hard to get a territory from Amazon because as soon as it comes up, it's almost gone. But I was telling my buddy about it. They used to fly in the Marine Corps with me. And this was COVID times. Furloughs kind of were getting ready to happen. And he was looking to, you know, hedge his risk a little bit by trying to do something else just in case he wasn't going to be able to fly or he got furloughed with Delta. And so I was telling him about it. And he lives in Atlanta, but he said he already knew about it as well. And he said the closest like territory to him was like Knoxville, Tennessee. It wasn't going to be worth the drive. But he said a franchise consultant reached out to him on LinkedIn, and he started talking to him, and he started going down the pipeline of owning the franchise. And this is where I like to give my next bit of advice, and that is never close a door on opportunities. I am a huge fan of just listening to what somebody says and then making an informed decision, an opinionated decision before I even hear what they say. And I'm so glad I did that because, you know, my first instinct is I am not a business owner. I'm not an entrepreneur. I didn't come from money. And in my mind, those are the only two people that own businesses. You either came from money and were exposed to it, or you had just had an entrepreneurial mindset. And that wasn't me. I was in the Marine Corps for 24 years. You know, a safe bet, not with my life, but with a paycheck, you know, was more safe than some other ones, jobs you could have where you can get laid off. But I listened to what he had to say. He put me in contact with this franchise consultant. And the next thing you know, I started going down this pipeline with my wife, figuring out, you know, like, hey, we might could do this, you know. And next thing you know, I bought a franchise. I bought a Mosquito Hunters franchise in two territories down here. And let me tell you what, I never knew I was meant to be a business owner until I became a business owner.
That's awesome. And I know what you mean too, because like it's a counterintuitive thing. We grew up in a Marine Corps, and I'm sure some of the other services are the same way. We always look in terms of risk management, and there's a time and a place for that, right? But if you view your life through the terms of the risk to reward ratio, or how do I mitigate my risk, then you never take any risk. And I'm trying to, even myself, I'm trying to mentally prepare to do something that's not guided by fear of whatever risk I'm about to assume.
Right. Spot on. It's not easy.
No. I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes thinking about it. No, but that's awesome. And so you're a business owner, you're a franchise owner for Mosquito Hunters. And I know that you were doing it starting in January of 2021, right around the time that you got out, and you've been doing it, correct?
Yep, still doing it.
Still doing
it. I don't do it. Let me say it this way. I own it, but I don't do it anymore, which I could talk more about. Oh. But what's funny, what I didn't say is, I mean, I still do it. Don't get me wrong, but it is a self-licking ice cream cone at this point. It's a well-oiled machine that runs itself. I've hired the right people to run it for me. But I was already hired on by Bank of America and signed a contract before I even started this franchise. Because during the process of trying to figure out what I wanted to do, doing informational interviews, sometimes it was like coffee lunches here, starting to do the veteran networking, local groups and stuff, and meeting other people. I met a guy that works at Bank of America that came in on the military development program. And next thing you know, he gave my, you know, he asked me to give him his resume. He passed it off to the recruiter. And I was offered a job in December or early December of 2020 and accepted it with a signing bonus 6 months before I was even supposed to go on terminal leave for the Marine Corps.
No kidding.
That does not happen. And this is one of the biggest points I want to bring up. That does not happen unless you are networking and working it well in advance. Because, Chris, I know you know him. How many of our peers, lieutenant colonels, I can tell you that there are some that they wait till the end because they constantly, and again, I love the Marine Corps, but they put the Marine Corps first. And when they retired, they're trying to scramble to do what everyone else is taking 2 years to do, if not more. And they struggle to find a job, struggle to transition. And the Marine Corps, you know, I love the Marine Corps, but the Marine Corps is going to continue to run after you leave. So you have to take the time for you and your family to start the transition. You know, once you've already mentally made the mindset that you're not going for that next rank or whatnot, don't take the pack off, but let it loose a little bit.
Yeah, it's like being deliberate. I would characterize it as that. They go into react mode. I mean, that's the reason why I'm doing this now. I'm learning from you. I'm not even thinking about retiring any earlier than 2025. And this is, I mean, I just love these conversations. I wish people would, and that's why I'm doing this too, so we can share the information to those that so they can start thinking about it a little bit earlier than 3 months out from the time that they hit their retirement date or their EAS or their EOS.
Right. And to hopefully change the mindset, because, you know, even when I was doing this, I was sharing a lot of information my last year in. And there were some of those senior master sergeants that were like, man, all he does is share that information. You know what? Some of them were the naysayers, right? They're like, oh, he talks about this. I'm providing information. And next thing you know, it's time for them to retire. And they're like, oh, can you tell me a little bit more about what you were saying with that? I'm like, oh, you were giving Sergeant Smith a hard time about going and doing this. Is a thing where you can go work for another company while you're still active duty. But there are things out there where there are programs out there where you can go work for another company like your last 3 to 6 months on active duty.
Yeah, you're talking about the SkillBridge program.
SkillBridge. Ah, there you go. SkillBridge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But some people were like, they were anti that until it became their time. And for them to retire, they were like, oh, now I see the importance of it. So I hope that the mindset changes a little bit as well, because we're not that good as a whole when it comes to leadership in supporting people transitioning. The Air Force has it down.
Yeah, or putting ourselves first sometimes.
Yes.
I mean, you can do your job and do it well, but also set boundaries and make time for yourself, because, I mean, nobody's going to care about your transition more than you. That's it. That's what everybody tells me.
Right.
You land a job and you start in July of 2021 as the Assistant Vice President, Data Platform Services, Global Technology and Operations. Well, you're going to have to decode that for me, because it sounds like a mouthful. It sounds like a lot of responsibility. It also sounds like Greek.
Yeah, it is Greek. And you know what? Some of the titles in the bank and across the industries can mean one thing to one person, one thing to another. Really what it is I came in at a decent level into the bank on a military development program that was, you know, it used to be two parts, global technology and global ops. And the way the military development program used to work is you would do 1 year in one year in the other. You're supposed to try to network, figure out kind of what you like to do. You know, you're owned by the program. The program pays your paycheck, but your manager gives you kind of the work to do, and they have a role in connecting you with their peers so that you can place out of the program to like a VP position or eventually to a VP position or something like that. So my first rotation was in technology. And because I got that PMP certification, I think I was kind of, herded towards IT project management. And let me tell you what, I did absolutely zero of that in the military. but project management as a whole, and just most any job that you can go do in the civilian sector, is no different than any job that you go switch to in the Marine Corps. You know, did you know how to go be RCO when you were RCO? Nope, but you figured it out. Did you know how to go be, did I know how to go be a district logistics officer at the time? No, but every single job, even though I'm a logistics officer filling a logistics officer billet, every single job is different. Kind of the same thing. So you just kind of figure out, you start asking questions what this is, you know, you have appetite to take on more, and then you can be successful. So I was heading up two major projects. I was in one first where we were taking all of our platforms of applications that we use across the bank and changing it from this old Terra data over eventually to the cloud. It involved a lot of people, different, you know, apps transitioned at one time or different times. And then I got moved over to this really cool, neat project where I was rubbing elbows with guys, PhDs, 46 patents underneath their belt. And it was very high level stuff that I didn't fully understand, but my job was to move the project along.
That's a very interesting perspective of what it means to be a project manager. And I know that I look at project management. I know that there's a lot of emphasis on the needs of project managers in IT, in the IT sector, in the technology sector. And it's somewhat reassuring to understand that a lot of it is project management is project management. It's probably a lot of leadership at the same time.
If I would redo it, Chris, though, I would tell you, you know, the PMP certification is starting to become a slight thing of the past. And what's really becoming to the forefront is agile, scrum master type project management. So if you were considering get a certification, or for anyone out there, IT project management is I don't want to say it's the way of the future. It's the now. And you would be far better set up for success getting some sort of agile. I mean, even if you went with Project Management Institute, PMI, you could get the PMI ACP, which is Agile Certified Practitioner. You could get that certification. You can go get a Scrum certification to be a Scrum Master. Most companies out there are using some sort of agile methodology now instead of the old waterfall type project management methodology.
Yeah, like developing user stories.
Yes.
I love the Kanban board, but I don't know if that's necessarily one of the things that people use anymore.
We use it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for some of you listeners that they may not know what agile means, I'll be honest with you, I only know enough to be dangerous. Could you kind of give us a summary of what agile actually is?
Yeah. It's so project waterfall type method, regular old school project is you plan the entire thing out and you execute it across the timeline. Agile is you plan just the next few weeks, and then you do that and you do little incremental steps because it allows you to make changes along the way when there's a little bit of uncertainty. It started off in technology, but it's really, you know, adaptable to all industries for the most part nowadays, but it's just smaller pieces. It's so you can be more nimble and make changes on the fly. Because what happens if you go down this 1 year long project and the end state is not anywhere near what you thought it was going to be, but you could have identified it sooner and made the changes? That's the gist of what agile methodology is.
Yeah. I think it was also developed largely in response to before there was agile, like the success rate on enterprise IT systems was really low because they did the same thing. It was like, hey, we're going to develop this project. It's going to take 2 years. They develop the waterfall, follow the waterfall. But agile is more of iterative development using cross-functional teams, doing what they call, I think, 2-week sprints. Well, I think every organization is a bit different, but yeah, definitely a great skill to pick up on. So you were an assistant vice president for data platform services, global technology and operations, and then you changed. I see now you're assistant vice president, enterprise merchant operations. What's the difference?
So I went to my second rotation. I went into global ops because I was in global tech first. and I went into enterprise merchant operations. So it's very intriguing because as a business owner, I do merchant operations. I am a merchant. I have a business, and my business, you know, takes money from clients and runs it through the system, yada, yada. That's essentially what Bank of America does now. And it's somewhat of a new, so Bank of America used to do this many years ago. Then they didn't divest it, but they kind of gave it to another company to run for them. And then in the last few years, they've taken it back and have made a huge effort to be back in merchant operations, where we have businesses that are our clients and that we process their transactions and everything's for them from their customers. You know, think of you go up to a food truck and you've got that little clover or square. We have those same things at Bank of America now. Little mini card readers, all that type of stuff. And what I was doing, what I am doing,
sorry, with, I didn't understand that.
My Apple Watch wanted to talk to me. I don't understand it either. what I'm doing with enterprise merchant operations is I'm on the complaints team. So we, you know, all complaints are logged. Every single complaint is logged. And if there's a miscomplaint, then the person gets coached, you know, we call it counseled, but coached in the civilian terminology. And so we go over all the complaints. We start categorizing them. We start looking for trends, identifying areas of improvement, maybe some processes that we can improve, maybe some procedures that we can rewrite. Because it all is just like improving what we can provide the customer base. So some very unique data analysis and presentation and interpolation to affect positive change when it comes to what we do with the merchants and everything like that. So that's kind of what I do now.
All right. So it's almost like in the first iteration that was project management focused. And in the second iteration, it's almost like what Lean Six Sigma does is you're trying to find continual process improvement and eliminate waste. Yes. To improve essentially the services provided to the customer.
Exactly.
All right.
People don't realize how much effort is put into trying to provide the best service. Constantly looking inward as an organization to how can we get better. And Bank of America does that really well.
That's all right. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Those are two different roles doing two different things. Which one kind of speaks to you more?
IT. I don't despise or hate what I do right now, but what I really liked about IT, have you ever played golf with people that are really good, much better than you?
I suck. So yes. I break windows. I don't play golf.
I don't get time to play much golf nowadays, but when I did, whenever I played with people that were much better than me, like my game was raised. Whenever I played with people that were worse than me, I spent more time in the woods looking for my ball, right? That is the same thing. In technology, I was working with some of the most professional, smartest people I know. And it raised my game. And I enjoyed that. And it's not that I'm not working with unintelligent people now, but honestly, I was working with some highly intelligent people and it just raised my game. And I enjoyed that. So I like the challenge, you know, of that. You know, the other thing too is, I don't know if you've heard this terminology or not, but there's this terminology called individual contributor. And when people were asking me, the worst question you can get asked, and you're probably going to get asked it as well, is what do you want to do after the Marine Corps? It's the hardest. It is the hardest question to answer because the best way to say is I have no clue. So what we normally say is we say the normal, the party lines where, you know, I'm really good at leading people. I'd like to find some sort of leadership position and blah, 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 blah. Well, then I started hearing and learning about this concept of being an individual contributor. And I said, you're telling me that I don't have any responsibilities for other people for a while and I can still make good money and be an assistant vice president? Sign me up. Because I loved leading in the Marine Corps, But sometimes when you're in certain leadership positions, that 10% can wear on you.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was the hook? What was the B of A hook? Because you said you didn't have any IT background. You didn't really know what you were getting into until you got into it. And then you kind of figured it out on your own. But was, I'm assuming what you just mentioned was what the hook was for you to say, absolutely, sign me up.
Well, part of the hook was I got a job offer well in advance because hard work. It's hard work transitioning. And like, you know, that meant I could take my pack off. I didn't have to continue to grind in the networking for another 6-8 months and hope that I land the job. So that was a huge, you know, check in the box for me. But I also learned more about banking along the way. And, you know, misconception. I didn't close doors. I listened to what people had to say. I learned that there's so much more behind the scenes and jobs out there that I can do. I think banking that, you know, I'm going to be, you know, doing the transactions and stuff. And there's just as much as the military has the support roles and stuff. Well, it's a little bit different in the banking. Most people don't realize that the majority of banks are more of an IT firm than they are a financial firm, because money physically isn't moved around as much anymore nowadays. And it's mostly on some sort of IT platform.
That's interesting. I never thought about banks are more like IT firms than they are the legacy idea of what a bank is.
Right. More patents and more software development comes out of banking than probably many other industries that you might think would be.
I believe it. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Do you know who invented the check deposit on your phone?
No.
From my understanding, it was USAA.
Huh.
Wait, okay. What?
Wait.
Your ability to scan a check and deposit it from your phone originated from USAA. They developed that first.
It's the thing. Yeah. It's like the thing that everybody has now on their smartphone if they don't.
Right.
If they even get it.
If they even use it anymore, because now everything's digital, right?
Right. Exactly.
I'm going to do a electronic funds transfer. They make it so easy now. But I mean, I still use mine every now and then. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Josh gave us a lot of time. Like a lot of golden nuggets there. And we kind of, man, I'm looking forward to editing this because I get to listen to it a second time. But if there were two or three things that you wanted to leave the listeners with, particularly those that are getting ready to transition, getting ready to make a big career change, whether they were in 4 years, or they're going to get retire after 20, what are the things you want to leave with them?
Start early. By start early, I literally do mean 2 years out. Start getting on LinkedIn, build your profile out, look at other people's profiles. Look at mine if you want. You can find me on LinkedIn. Kind of see what it looks like, what right looks like, and then start doing informational interviews, just picking people's brains. People like to talk, you know, so pick their brains about what they like, what they don't like, industries. Because what you're doing is you're learning about maybe what you want to go do while you're simultaneously making a connection that might be, because here's the deal. Most people do not get their job through submitting an application. Like your likelihood of getting a legit good job and making it through your resume, making it through the applicant tracking software is significantly lower. And then you getting the job after that is significantly lower than somebody recommending you that you met. So that's another reason why those informational interviews are important. Try to do a couple a week. You'll start to build out your connections. You'll get to the point where you go from sending friend requests or connection requests on LinkedIn to getting like 3 or 4 of them a day. And just start becoming active on the LinkedIn. Take advantage of American corporate partners. Take advantage of any other thing that's out there. The USO has a transition course as well. And I recently, I don't know much about this, but I recently heard there are a few places out there that have a nonprofit off-base transition readiness seminar.
I know that the Marine Corps, at least in the Hampton Roads area in the Mid-Atlantic, have something called the Rule Line Seminar. But there are also other seminars out there. And it's not just the Marine Corps, it's the Navy and the Hampton Roads area. They have a couple, but those can be found through a lot of the transition readiness resources available on military bases. They're out there. That's a good point.
And then, you know, try to, the more time you can figure out what you want to do, the less chances you are of being the statistic of the person leaving their first job within their first year, because they're not satisfied. But just know that when you get into your first job, things do not move as fast as they did in the Marine Corps. You will not be as busy, and that is okay, because some people struggle with that. Go open a franchise to fill up the rest of your time.
it's like you're intentionally trying to pack every minute of your schedule there, Josh. No, hey, that's great. We asked quite a few questions, but we probably missed a few. I know you mentioned that people can find you on LinkedIn. Can they DM you? Are there other ways they can get in touch with you to ask a question?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best way to get a hold of me. What I will say is I get a lot of messages a day from recruiters, marketers, and stuff like that. So if you could just leave a message that is personalized, then I'll definitely know you're not a marketer. That's another recommendation is when you send a connection request to anyone, like Alexandra just did it, she sent a connection request with a note, right? Those go a long way. I would have accepted hers anyway, but because I knew who she was.
You better.
But if you didn't know who it was, a little note goes a long way and people are more apt to accept it. But yeah, just reach out to me on LinkedIn or I'm on Facebook, but I'm not sure if my profile is private or not. LinkedIn's the best way.
We'll stick with LinkedIn. LinkedIn's a good resource. Plus you're forcing people to do what you're telling them to do, which is get on LinkedIn, create a profile and start not sucking 2 years out. So and I'm gonna write that as a note to myself on my mirror. So.
Yeah, that's his next mantra.
That's my next mantra. That's right.
I mean, think about this, Chris. Look how many people you're meeting, and they're probably gonna look at your profile, and this is gonna be the first and last impression.
Oh, geez. That may not be a good thing. I'll tell you what though. You know, talking to you, talking to everybody else, it's been a great learning experience. And you know, it's funny. I learned a new skill and I'm getting better at public speaking in the process of it. So Josh, I really appreciate the time that you took to come onto the podcast, give us your lessons learned. This has been really enjoyable. And man, I look forward to seeing where you go after, you know, instead of being assistant vice president, who knows, maybe there's VP in the future for you. And I know that there is, there's greatness ahead.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hey, thank you very much for your time. I'll be in touch.
All right.
And Josh Ambrose has just left our virtual studio.
Yo. Love his energy.
Oh, yeah.
Totally loved his energy. I got to say, I thought I was a planner. I plan. He is a planner. I mean, he's got it down, but he's so right. He is right. You can't turn down opportunities, especially when you have no idea what you really want to do. Don't say no. Mm-hmm. Leave the door open. Figure it out. I mean, he figured it out. He went into something that he knows nothing about. He bought a franchise he knew nothing about, and he made it happen. And look where he is now. It's planning.
Yeah. And it comes back to some of the very basic things he was saying. If you can hook your line up to the rig and step out of an airplane, if you can land on an aircraft carrier, and then it just goes across like so many different things, whether you're in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, you've done all these things. They involve accepting risk. You learn how to survive on the minimal. There's no reason why you can't go out there and crush this. It's a great message for me. And as you can probably tell, Josh's story and background connects with me on a very personal level. Very similar circumstances. You know, I went through a divorce. I have a young daughter. I'm now geographically close to her. And it just made the decision very easy for me. I know it's not easy for other people, but like he said, you'll know your time. And I knew my time. And luckily, I knew my time well in advance. And I'm very blessed to have a duty assignment that puts me close to her with a set of orders that can last at least 36 months. And some of you that are listening, you might be going through it. You are not alone. Whether you're man or woman, doesn't matter, branch of service, you might be in the same situation, officer, enlisted, doesn't matter. You have what it takes. You're going to go through it. You're going to get through it. And if you just focus on doing the things that you know, the basics, putting in the hard work, putting in the time, you're going to crush it. 100%. Man, we got a lot of good notes. We got a lot of good gouge in this episode. I hope people listen to it, embrace it, and take massive action if you need to. Take massive action. So, this wraps up another great conversation. Thank you very much for listening. If you like what you heard, please leave us a 5-star review. 5, not 4, not 3. Give us 5. If you're going to give us 1, don't. I'm kidding. Listen, we also believe in continuous process improvement here on the New Mission Career Transition Podcast. We want to know what you think. We want to know what it is that we're not talking about that you want us to talk about. If there's a guest that you want us to bring on, let us know. Look, if you want to support the podcast, you can follow New Mission Career Transition on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or other podcast apps. You can follow us on Instagram at New Mission CT. That's New Mission Charlie Tango. We would also love to hear your feedback. So you can either DM us on our Instagram account, or you could send us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com. That's newmissioncharlietango@gmail.com. We will get back to you as soon as we can, and we will take action ourselves. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.